So someone, some unknown actor, is hacking Ukraine. Who could it be?
I think it's Costa Rica.
Costa Rica. The Costa Rican cyber army is really strong.
They're going to come after me now.
You know, Ukraine, they're such nice people.
They are.
Have you had chicken Kiev?
They are actually nice people.
They are very nice people.
They are.
But yep. They had a bad breakup recently, and he's not taking it very well.
It's like the ex-girlfriend or crazy ex-girlfriend.
He started posting shirtless videos of him on horseback. I mean, you know.
If I can't have you, nobody
can. This guy's desperate. He tried to date Ukraine's cousin, Belarusia.
Belarus.
not happening.
That didn't work out too well either.
All right, so we're talking about Whispergate, right?
Yes, Whispergate. So it's interesting when these things happen. Now, I'm not saying this is what's happening now.
Well, let's start with what it is. What happened?
But what happened is on January 15th, mm-hmm. a set of malware dubbed Whispergate was reported to have been deployed against Ukraine targets. The incident reported to contain three individual components deployed by the same adversary.
Huh.
A malicious bootloader, local disk, wiping out local disks, Discord downloader, etc.
This isn't ransomware. This is destruction.
Yeah, and that's a very good distinction. This is all about destruction. So it's literally wiping
almost
drives.
Almost like a prelude to war.
What?
One would think that. Yeah, somebody wants their systems wiped clean so that they can't use them for tactical whatever.
And you know what's really weird is it's mostly military sites that are getting hit.
Shocker.
Government sites.
That is a shocker.
Right? Ukraine government sites were defaced and hacked.
So is Ukraine getting any help? Are they, what are they doing about it?
That's a good point. I mean, I think at this point, a lot of people are actually trying to help. But, you know, it's unfortunate. If you're not ready for a cyber attack of the nation state level,
yeah.
I don't know that there's much you could do. I mean, if you were to take any of the world's top cyber nation states and pit them against any smaller state in the world, it would be tough. It'd be tough to defend against.
Well, I think this is a test of backups. If they have a backup of their systems, they can restore the systems.
Yep.
If they don't, they're out of luck. It's literally that cut and dry.
Now, this was targeted at Ukraine, obviously, but are we safe in the U.S. from this kind of attack? I mean, this is different than ransomware. This is deathware.
Yeah,
scorched earthware.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is tough. I mean, I know a lot of organizations in the United States that this, if this were to hit them, they'd be in trouble. And I think that's why you'll notice there was a post by CISA talking about this new attack, the Whispergate attack, and urging people and organizations in the United States to actually be prepared for this. Right.
Well, so let's back up a little bit. So Dwayne, right. you and I were both involved in the wake of the World Trade Center collapse.
Yes.
With two major financial institutions who will remain nameless to protect the guilty in their recovery efforts. And one recovered pretty fast.
Oh, yeah.
Hours.
Within hours.
11 hours. Yeah. I think it was 11 hours we had.
11 hours to be fully functional, but within 3 hours, they were up and running in a rudimentary sense.
And the other one was days.
Yep.
And these were equivalent organizations. Some might, if you look at net assets, the one that recovered slower was probably the richer.
Yeah,
and then we weren't talking about more data. It's just that this is the lesson that has to be learned from this that hasn't been learned from ransomware. And that is, let's say the world goes and takes my advice, which is highly unlikely, and makes ransom paying illegal or impossible. This is what it looks like. This is what there's no difference between this and ransomware, because you have to format the systems and reinstall from backup.
Right.
And so this is actually better than ransomware, because there's no, oh, we might get it back. There's no hopefulness that you might get it back. Mm-hmm. Remember, there's been strains of ransomware that pretended that you could decrypt them, and they didn't. There was no decryption keys for it. They didn't. The bad guys never kept the decryption keys, and they never intended to send you a decryption. They just took the ransom and insult to injury. So this kind of attack's been around for a while.
It's tough. If you're a bad guy, you got to put in a lot of infrastructure to actually receive
the keys
and and then be able to use those to decrypt. And it's way easier if you don't have to write any decryption code.
So if you lump this in with ransomwares that you're not willing to pay or not able to pay, then it all comes down to the one question: how good are your backups? Are they tested? What's your restore point time? How long does it take you to get back running? And do you even have backups that are valid?
Right.
So we need to talk about this because, you know, some concrete strategies. First of all, don't click that freaking link.
Right.
So all of these are predicated on the assumption that somebody got an email and clicked a link they weren't supposed to click, right? So the social engineering part of it starts the whole problem, right?
Or they got a USB drive that was plugged into the wrong system, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Either way, humans being the weakest part of the system again. Yeah.
Now, I'm going to give you guys a link. I'm going to post a link to this blog post from 2020 by Dropbox. Dropbox has some protections, and I'm only saying this because I use Dropbox, right? So they have this thing called Dropbox Rewind, and it enables Dropbox customers to pick the exact point in time to which they need to revert their account and syncs changes across all connected devices. So they're obviously thinking about this stuff, but you know, my issue is, okay, if I have a drive that is, you know, connected, like I mapped a drive to my Dropbox, whatever, and everything that I have is in that drive, and things are syncing up automatically, does that get wiped too? And if it gets wiped, can I restore it? So that's what prompted me to go in down this rabbit hole with Dropbox.
It depends.
Well, and Windows 10 and Windows 11 have built-in ransomware protection, especially if you're using OneDrive to do your syncing. If you literally click the start button and then type ransomware, the first thing that comes up is ransomware protection. Hmm. And you have the ability, like, for example, with me, I replicate my desktop and my documents and all that good stuff out through OneDrive. So if at any point in time my computer were to get ransomware, 9 times out of 10 is probably something I was writing. But if it was from the outside world...
And I might add, it was awesome.
And it was awesome.
And it was awesome. And if you look at volume shadow copy, it's built into Windows, but you have
volume shadow copy.
Yeah,
that's going to be my new hacker name, volume shadow copy. It does sound like a dark hacker group name.
It's a good name for a rock star,
rock band.
Who's a member
of Labyrinth of Pain.
I believe it.
Volume shadow copy, for example, if you turn it on, it keeps track of the differences, and it'll keep, I think, 32 or 64, I don't know what the max is, instances of that file so that you can go back to different copies. And so you can right click on a file and say, go back to that. Now, if you or an average user has the ability to shut off volume shadow copy, then the malware is going to shut it off, so you lose access to all that.
Right.
Yeah, and more specifically, a lot of ransomware is actually wiping out volume shadow copy.
Right.
And would they also, you know, if somebody has access to my computer enough so that they can delete all my files, they probably can tell Dropbox to erase everything as well. I mean, I'm not sure about that, but of course, I'm speculating.
Yeah.
Well, the question is, did Dropbox give you settings that makes it hard for you to delete everything?
I certainly hope
so. Or
do
they make it convenient for you to delete everything?
I'm sure they make it convenient because I can literally just go into a file that's synced with Dropbox and delete something. But then I could probably still go to this Dropbox Rewind feature and say, you know that file? Well, maybe the file has to be there in the first place, but... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, these are questions that we need to know the answers to, and somebody ought to do the research.
So if you're basing your business on this, then I don't know is not a good answer.
Yeah, you're right.
Listen, I just break it.
Well, if you're basing your personal files, so the files that you guys are both talking about are, it would be inconvenient, but your businesses aren't riding on these files.
Right.
Our business has separate backup procedures that back up offsite and onsite and repetitively. What is the answer? Is like almost 20 copies of every file in the Advocate Enterprise in various backups.
Right.
If you don't have a backup strategy that's been tested, that's tried, then you're completely at risk to this and ransomware and everything else. This is a test of your backups. And so how long it takes you to restore critical systems from backup is the thing that'll decide how long this takes you out.
Yeah.
That's the simplest answer.
Yeah. And I would be concerned. Let's say you're Ukraine. I would be concerned. Now, Ukraine obviously blames Russia, obviously, according to this CISA report. But some security experts are attributing it to a ghostwriter, a state-sponsored hacking group with ties to Belarus. So,
okay, but that's the same thing. Belarus is Russia's new girlfriend.
What?
Yeah.
But it's not Russia. Russia did not do it.
Well, actually, Belarus and Ukraine used to be Soviet republics.
Yeah.
They used to be Soviet states. And so this is a family quarrel.
So it's interesting in that if these types of attacks, A, they're very devastating because it does take you down for a while, right? So your recovery, even if your recovery point objective is, you know, a couple of days ago, if your recovery time, it takes you a week to bring the systems up and online, then you're out for a week, right?
Well, let's talk about how you can ameliorate that. There's different ways to have... Let's take survivalists, just because everybody can relate to, you know, the crazy person who's eating like spoiled meat out of a tin.
My neighbor Joe.
So I would be considered a survivalist to some extent, but I'm not hoarding food or building bunkers that you know of. But I have some weapons and contingency plans, and you know, I know what island I would live on if the zombie apocalypse came. But I'm kind of a middle of the road kind of guy. There are different levels.
Right.
And the same thing is true backup. So you can have backups, and exactly what Dwayne says is true. You can also go the extra mile if you can afford it, and you can have backup systems that are already running a backup of your last maybe 24-hour data that you just switch over to if the primary system gets exposed. And they're only online during the period it takes to do the block level replication or whatever you're doing. And that way you just switch over. That's what we do.
Right. But here's a big problem with that strategy. Well, not a big problem, but a concern, something to think about with that strategy. So according to this, the attack very well could have come through three different avenues. One, CVE-2021-32648, which is a vulnerability in the October CMS, which is what they're running. So CMS is just a management system, web management system, where they can have information. So a web breach could have caused this. B, lost credentials, they believe, could have caused this. And C, CNN also reported that a Ukraine IT service company that helped develop these sites was also a victim. So now you're talking supply chain. So now you go, okay, let's restore everything, and it took us 2 hours. Well, if you're still running the same CMS with the same passwords and the same users and the same et cetera, you got to assume within an hour, you're going to get breached again. You're going to get dropped.
Right. Because we were initially talking about this as a phishing.
Correct.
A phishing attack.
But even phishing, like if I were to send a phishing email out, here's more hacker advice. Listen, if you send a phishing email out, you should definitely grab all of the local security accounts and passwords and information you possibly can and any proprietary configuration of software. Because at that point, it's going to give you avenues back in if they do restore. Because you don't want to be kicked out for too long, right?
Yeah, that's why the first thing you do when you hack a system is patch it to make sure nobody else can get in, right?
Patch it.
Hey, don't give away my tactic.
Patch it. What do you think I am?
You know, it's not as simple as it sounds, but what we're seeing is... The landscape's getting more complicated. Backup is something people take for granted. The backup's not important. The restore is what's important.
Sure.
Lots of people do backup every day. Most people don't do restore even once a year.
Right.
To practice it.
Yep.
And I can't tell you how many times I've heard and even seen, we have the backups. They just won't restore. Well, then they're not backups.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. And it's interesting because there's a lot of components in this. Because Log4j is for play right now, too. The Ukraine police believe that potentially Log4j was used for this exploitation.
Oh, really?
There's multiple different avenues. What's interesting also about this Whispergate is, so let's say we want to deploy a piece of ransomware. If I put it on some jacked up web server that I just built, right, most people are going to be able to find that. They're going to be like, hey, listen, you know what? This is a brand new web server that the registration was a week ago. Don't download anything from here.
Right.
So you might have some decent firewalls that can stop that. In this particular case, they were actually hosting the payload on Discord.
Interesting.
Yeah. So what's interesting, and a lot of people may not know this about Discord, anytime you post a picture or a file or something in Discord, there's actually you could right click on that and say, I want to view it in my browser. And then if you look at the URL, you'll actually see the what's called the CDN, the Content Distribution Network, link directly to that object in the cloud or in, you know, the Content Distribution Network's
storage
system. Yeah. So at that point, if I were to put a file there and get a direct link, I'm not hosting it anymore.
Yeah.
Discord's hosting the malware.
Right.
So you wouldn't, it would be, it gets much harder for you to then say, oh, well, just deny anything from Belarus. Now it's a Discord.
Well, it's kind of like a lot of hackers use Amazon or Azure to host things so that there's IP addresses are associated with huge companies that you can't block.
Right.
It seems to me that a lot of what you guys do is detective work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. I mean, you guys are like the monk of computing, right? You go in, somebody says something happened here. People clicked on stuff. We don't know what happened, but you guys can figure it out. Right. And then you put your hands up, you know, and you like look through your thumbs and,
exactly.
You know? Well, I just asked Dwayne, how would you do it? And that's how they did it. So actually back to what Dwayne was saying about, well, yeah, they're going to get reinfected. That's also assuming that their systems are all interconnected and they're not running zero trust, which is also a problem. And I agree. It's probably
if
the most
likely
thing.
If they were running zero trust before the hack,
then one system
would have gone down and it wouldn't have been a big deal. So you got to assume they're not running
zero. I know what zero trust is a philosophy, but you guys are talking about it like it's an app.
It's an approach that says that you get rid of the convenience of interconnected systems and single sign-on. So remember the decade where we spent all that time trying to get single sign-on because it was so convenient?
Right.
That was a mistake.
What was it? What did Microsoft call it?
Passport.
Hailstorm. Yeah.
Hailstorm Passport. And it was a great idea. And then the hackers, that's why we can't have nice things.
this is why we can't have nice things.
Well, I also remember what happened was that Microsoft, at first, it was like a single sign-on thing. And then they wanted you to put everything in Passport, like your credit card numbers and and that.
It overreached.
Yeah. And then XP had all the hacking stuff. And so the response from the world was a resounding, yeah, no. Right. Yeah, we'll do that. We'll get right on that, Microsoft. Yeah. So, you know, it's been a learning curve. But as you say, this is a dynamic world. And hackers come up with new things every day.
The three of us taught the first ASP, not ASP.NET, ASP course that came out from Microsoft official curriculum. I know for a fact the three of us taught that. And one of the slides showed how you make a login page and it concatenated the credentials.
Yep.
Sure.
It created a string, you know, select star from customers or from users where email equals plus whatever they plugged in, you know, and password equals, you know, and then the password in clear text. Yeah, exactly.
SQL injection wasn't a thing at that point, and nobody knew that was a vulnerability. So we're constantly evolving. And
we try to do something nice and little Bobby Tables comes around and boom, your database is gone.
Little Bobby Tables.
So this was a good segue to talk about backups. If an organization, when I look at an organization and their preparedness, I look for a few things just to start.
Right.
Are they running current systems? And I know if it's a big organization, a large hospital, a large bank, a large large insert industry, they're going to have excuses for why, well, we need XP or we need Windows 2000. And it's all just bull. They're sacrificing their security for convenience.
Well, but it's tough though. We're a hospital and we're running an X-ray machine or an MRI or something like that. This is typically what we see. And that piece of equipment now is not certified on anything other. And I've seen this, has not certified on anything other than Windows XP.
I hear you. And what if the only way we can get water to the patients is through lead pipes? We should just keep the lead pipes.
You always have the best analogies.
I guess not.
I mean, sure, that's the reason they give.
Wait. Are you saying they can either drink water or die or go mentally insane? One or the other.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Pick one.
So, stay thirsty, damn it.
The problem is they're declaring that, well, we can't do this, but in almost all cases, it's too expensive to do it for them. Yeah. They don't want to do it, or it would be inconvenient, or they'd have to rewrite the code, or they made a mistake in their acquisition because they backed a company. And when that company went out of business, they didn't look for a new vendor because they'd made an investment.
And there's also the political issues of, you know, losing face and all that.
But that's a precursor. That's a really good indicator on whether that's a company that's going to get hacked. Mm. It's updated systems. Mm-hmm. It's patching those systems on a regular basis, updating them. Yep. And it's then backups and testing the backups. And then after that, there's, you know, many, many things that affect.
Right.
Yeah. And I could see if all hospitals said, you know what, we're not going to buy this type of MRI machine anymore until it's been updated to, you know, the latest software.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That company would probably change that quickly.
About half of the time I've seen that, it's because the company went out of business and they still own the equipment and they're still writing off the equipment. But they don't want to segregate the equipment from their network, which would be a better solution, but they still don't want to do it.
I think a lot of times though, those systems are not thought of in cybersecurity. Like you have your mail server and your file server and that sort of stuff. And we got this X-ray machine over here and it's connected so you can pull X-rays off it, but that's not something we should worry about in cybersecurity. Even though it's running a full Windows like workstation.
That's like saying all of our glasses are made out of glass. They're not lead, just the pipes are lead.
It's just fine. Like watching Statler and Waldorf, you know?
It's terrible.
All right, should we talk about some of these other stories?
Yes. They're all well. Actually, I can summarize all of it with one word.
What's that?
Russia.
It's funny. I was joking with Carl before. I think that the title of this episode should be "From Russia with Love."
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Actually, it should be "From Russia with Hate."
Yeah, probably. So this next piece is also Russia. So they're not really busy right now, apparently, on the global stage. So they decided they'd throw an olive branch to the cyber world. And Russia cracks down on the Reval ransomware group. Reval? I don't know if you guys have seen it. So Reval's, if you take a look at their sort of sordid history, those guys have taken down so many large organizations with ransomware. I mean, if you watch some of the videos of the FSB, is it FSB, Patrick?
Yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it in Russian? I know you're
you don't pronounce it that way in Russian, but that's how you translate it to English.
What is FSB?
It's the KGB's new name since Paul, since 91.
Right.
So wait a minute. Russia has got a problem with ransomware.
No. Russia doesn't have a problem with ransomware. Russia has an asset called ransomware that they use. So take Reval or Evil or however you want to pronounce them. They've been operating with impunity in Russia for years, and they did the Colonial Pipeline hack. Mm-hmm. And we've been calling for their heads for a long time.
Oh.
And suddenly Russia said, yeah, we'll arrest them. And they arrested 13 of them. And there's a great picture of Zayats, one of the guys. And he looks so despondent in this glass cell because he's been betrayed. What happened is, in my opinion, Russia is dealing with the West, is trying to get NATO to give in to some outrageous demands about Ukraine. And they're basically saying, look, we can do the things you want us to do and shut down these bad ransomware people. But if you put a sanction on us, that's not going to happen.
Oh, so you think these guys were Russia partners, you know, partners with the government?
I think Russia turns a knowing and widely understood blind eye to these ransomware gangs.
You don't think they go out for vodka after a hack?
Maybe they do, because they knew exactly where to find them.
Yeah, of course.
Didn't take long.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. And their boxes of cash.
You don't think they send them Christmas cards or, you know?
Get invited to the corporate party.
The best thing about this is it will have a chilling effect. If that's the case, it will have a chilling effect.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If you're a ransomware guy in Russia, you now know that you're a sacrificial cow that they might just decide to trade.
Okay. What's the possibility that this, and I'm sure it's all completely legit, but what's the possibility that this is all BS and they just said, hey guys, why don't you legitimately have a job with the Russian Information Services?
And by the way, pose in this glass cell so we can tell everybody you're in jail.
Right, exactly. We've arrested them. They'll never make it out of a cell. You guys can work in a cube over here.
Well, we arrest them.
There's talk about extradition. So if they're extradited, then I'd say that would go bomb me up.
Yeah,
but the other thing is you have to understand, the Russian government is absolutely happy to sacrifice these guys.
Of course. Right now, they kind of have a little problem.
Yeah. So, yeah. If the Ukraine problem with the Russian, you know, demands was resolved tomorrow, I'd be real nervous if I was a ransomware person operating out of Russia, because part of the deal would be, okay, all of this has to be shut down. All of these people have to be brought to justice, extraditions across the board, and massive jail times to set an example. Wow. I wouldn't want to be in those shoes. So,
no.
And this is Russia trying to pull out all the stops to do everything they can. Now, things have really backfired on Russia because they tried to weaken NATO and they ended up strengthening it as a result. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to get their demands. I don't know if that means they're going to invade. But in the meantime, cyber is definitely a place where they're trying to do barter and trade. And this is the result.
Yeah, I get it now. So, you know, all this world drama is overshadowing little problems like WordPress. WordPress has got a
who
little
uses
problem.
WordPress? Who uses WordPress?
I don't know. Not me. I'm a developer.
Only a bazillion people use WordPress.
Yeah.
So this one's interesting. For those of you who own WordPress sites, there's not it's not a Log4j internet burning issue, but it's something you should know about. So there is a WordPress plugin flaw that puts about 20,000 sites at risk.
You know, not many. Just a few.
20,000. It's a couple. And it's dubbed, for those of you who are going to go look this up, CVE-2022-0218. And the basics of this is it's a WordPress plugin that allows you to do email. Yeah, it's WordPress HTML mail.
Okay.
It's a plugin used for designing custom email forms, etc. So the reason that this is interesting is, A, there's 20,000 sites out there that potentially could be relaying spam and phishing attacks and that sort of stuff.
Right.
But the other thing that's interesting from a developer's perspective, and I know you'll appreciate, Carl, is how many APIs have you created in your life?
I've been creating every day since I was like 12. My mother said, go play and make some APIs.
Play well with others. So I wrote integration and APIs. So an API is just really a software endpoint where software A can talk to software B. Yeah. And they will usually agree on a language to talk to each other. So it could be anything from transmitting banking information to, you know, sending emails. Heck, most of the internet works on APIs, right? So in this particular case, this plugin has an API for sending email that is unprotected, right? So your main site, if you try and log into the main WordPress site and you say, I want to send an email, that's all authenticated, etc. But then that main site goes and talks to the plugin over an API and there's no authentication there. So if you know how to code, you just talk directly to the API and you send as much mail as you want. So that's been fixed January.
So after all 10th. That, it's been fixed.
Well, it's been fixed. People have to apply the fix.
Exactly. And there's still as of January 20th today, there's still 20,000 sites that are
All right.
That are breachable by them.
So I wonder, let me ask this question. And I've thought about this in the past, but I haven't thought about it recently. When are we going to get to the point where these plugins phone home and just get patched automatically?
Well, that could expose them as another attack vector, couldn't it?
Yeah. Of course. Supply chain. Of course it could. But at this point, it's like maybe it's an opt-in, because I'm confident that in 2 years, there'll be at least 1,000 of these sites still running unpatched.
Sure. Yep.
And if you had an automated, you know, update system where it looked and said, okay, this is available, this is available. Even if you had it, you ran it as a piece of software. You know what I think? The Log4j has exposed the concept of an SBOM, a software mm-hmm. bill of materials. Yep. A lot of companies are going to have to, and we mentioned this last week, a lot of companies are going to have to start listing all the components that are part of their systems. And maybe this can be the burgeoning of a new dawn where you get applications that keep track of not only those SBOMs, but everything you're running, everything that's been installed, so that when it gets a patch, it can validate the patch. It can ask you, you know, give you an option to opt in or out of the patch. But if you don't do anything, it just patches it. Now, that'll be complicated and it'll bring new problems. But the question is, will it solve more problems than it causes?
I don't know. So let's say you have a developer who goes and writes a piece of code that unfortunately has a flaw in it, releases a new build, and now everybody's patched to it.
No, I'm talking about patching based on disclosure of vulnerability and assurance that that vulnerability is now patched.
No, I get it. Take not Log4j. Patching.
Yeah.
Right. Let's take Log4j.
Yeah.
Log4j had an initial recommendation, I think it was of 2.15 as the fix.
Oh, I get
it. If they had pushed that down, that was still exploitable. So now it's like, okay, you pushed an exploitable version down. Well, maybe I was running version 1.4 that wasn't exploitable and
But let's not be too cagey about this. If I look back 5 years, everything's exploitable.
Because exploitable
is relative to time.
It is. Absolutely. You're 100% right.
So what I'm thinking is, if there were a system you could run and you used it to install all your software on a system, it knows all the installers, it knows where everything is. It can, you know, do checks. Maybe it should be part of your antivirus. Sure. And now if it sees WordPress plugin, it's something that's been installed. It's been fixed. The fix has been in the wild for 3 weeks. Mm. Unless I'm going to give my owner, my manager, an email and give them an option to stop me. But otherwise, I'm going to patch.
Mm-hmm.
I think because if we don't get to that point, how bad is this going to be in another 5 years?
Right.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
We're already playing whack-a-mole. We have to automate our way out of this. And maybe it's AI-based. Maybe there'll be some kind of AI module that's running in the cloud somewhere that helps you figure this out. But there's going to be a class of software that we're not thinking about now. And maybe it's the synthetic system admin module.
Right.
Mm. The hate mail. Just address all hate mail to Carl, please.
Well, speaking of Log4j, so there was some news in about Log4j with SolarWinds, right?
Oh God, two great tastes that go great together.
Yeah, right.
SolarWinds and Log4j. And Log4j.
So for those who haven't been paying attention, let's just tell everybody what SolarWinds is. it's a service. It's a cloud service, right?
Yep. Yeah. So SolarWinds is It's like an umbrella set of software that helps you manage servers
enterprise.
And services.
It's enterprise. An enterprise software.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So it's not a bad actor. Nope. It's actually a legit service that people use.
Yes. They got hacked. They got badly hacked, badly pwned, and they became the attack vector.
Which is ironic, though, SolarWinds as the name of a company, because really, for those of you who do radio communications and that sort of stuff, SolarWind destroys propagation.
SolarWinds are bad.
Right? You don't want a solar cycle. But anyway.
I mean,
it should have been called anti-SolarWinds.
Look at Mars. SolarWinds did not do Mars any favors.
No. But anyways, coming back.
With no magnetic field, this could be your future.
That's right.
About this is that SolarWinds has a bunch of pieces of software that's in their family. One of them is called ServView. ServView is a piece of software that gives you the ability to authenticate to a backend LDAP server. So an LDAP server, for those of you who haven't been managing networks as long as Carl Patrick and I, which is a very long time.
One time.
Many decades.
Since the dawn of computers.
Oh my God, wait.
So LDAP is it's just a directory.
It's like a phone book.
Yeah, that allows you to log it, they authenticate to it. So you can say, hey, here's my username and my password. Is that a valid username and password? And LDAP can come back and say yes. It's how Active Directory works the back.
Yep.
And there's a lot of LDAP, you know, directories out there. Active Directory is just one of them.
Yeah.
What's interesting here is Microsoft is the one who's warning of this, even though Microsoft's Active Directory is not vulnerable. What they're seeing is people using Log4j exploits against the ServView software. And that login is then attempting to hit Active Directory. And AD's like, yeah, I have no idea what this is, and throws it out. Microsoft's seeing it and going, okay, cool, we're safe. But the problem is, if you're authenticating against a different LDAP in the back end that is susceptible, this exploit's going to get you. It's because it is, it is being, in high fidelity, it's being passed back to the login system. So just another thing to look out for. You know, if you have an LDAP system that is not Active Directory that's authenticating against your ServView SolarWinds, if you didn't rip your SolarWinds software out during the supply chain attack, you may want to look at it again and see if it's authenticating.
Poor company.
I know. I feel bad because it, you know, honestly, Patrick, coming back to what Patrick was saying, it is interesting how the systems that are secure today in 5 years are not secure. And nothing's changed except for our knowledge about how they work. I know, you know, 10 years ago, you know, there are certain firewalls I'd go, they're impervious. You'll never get by those. And now I'm like, Oh, it's super simple. All I need to do is bypass it this way.
Well, because there's 0 days, and once they're no longer 0 days, they're obvious.
Yeah, they're common knowledge. And you're like, oh, how did I not see that before? But there's countless lines of code out there. You can't go through all of them. So
I'm still fascinated by how the first person who started a fire decided that rubbing two sticks together was going to work to start a fire. I'm like, how they?
Never mind all this code stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, so interesting week. Russia has been at the forefront of it. Hopefully next week we'll have something different to talk about.
Unlikely.
But I doubt it.
But I doubt it.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Das vidanya.
All right.
See you next time. Bye.